Okay, I think we can start. I hope you can all hear me and see the slides. Please use the chat if you have anything to ask or comment during my lecture, and I would be happy to go through them and answer to them after my talk. I think that's a bit easier, so then I can look them while I'm done with my slides. But welcome to my SIPA course lecture on intensified job demands and well-being at work. So this is, I guess, the only one focusing on the work life, this kind of, you know, very specific way of this lecture series this year. So I'm working as a university researcher in work and organizational psychology here in Jyväskylä University. And I'm going to walk you through with our latest and ongoing project. That is a collaboration, a consortium with the University of Tampere. So the leaders are Saija Mauna and Taru Feldt, who also work here in Jyväskylä, and Saija also in Tampere. And I've been working with this study for the past year or so. And I will be presenting some of the recent findings that we have acquired from this research project. And this is a recording that will be used in the spring term, but I think I would really love to hear also your input. Like I said, please write comments or questions in the chat so we can also let the students who are participating in spring term to hear your thoughts. So it's a bit more, hopefully a bit more interactive than just myself talking all the time. Let's start with the kind of a broad introduction to the topic. So why we wanted to focus on intensified job demands and what do they mean? So this is all based on the sociologist Hartmut Rosa, who has kind of invented or talked and written about accelerating society. So this is kind of the broad societal phenomenon that has been going on for several decades, starting from the Industrial Revolution or so. But it's kind of like the word intensified includes, that it's all the time, it's kind of getting more and more intense. So what this means in practice is that we feel that we are always in a hurry. So acceleration means that the pace of life keeps on increasing, and this means that in order to kind of keep up with the status quo, or just to, for example, in companies, to be alive and make profit, exist, you have to do more and more, faster and faster, be more effective all the time. And this, of course, includes the feeling of having too little time at work. You can feel that there are a lot of tasks you are required to handle, maybe even less time to do that over the years. You can feel that this kind of time pressure and workload is increasing. And also kind of requirements for different multitasking. So you might feel that at work you cannot focus on one task at a time, but you have to do several things at the same time. So this is the kind of time-related aspect of the accelerating society we live in. And what this relates closely to are the kind of societal trends that have been going on. Like I said, we have this economic growth that is, and consumerism and capitalism, that is all based on the idea that we have to do more and have more, and this, like in the previous dimension, means that we are kind of in this accelerating wheel that we are trying to run to keep up with. And this also means that we are trying to collect a lot of experiences, the way that we feel that a good life could look like, means that a lot of us feel this kind of pressure to have things and do things and experience things. Also, this kind of short-lived trends and unpredictability, meaning that our lives are more than they were, let's say, 50 years ago. Things are also in this way kind of happening in a faster pace. Things are in fashion now, or what we want to do now, it can change very rapidly and also in an unpredictable way. And what has made this possible is this one kind of major change that is related to the technological acceleration. So this means that we have digitalization, we have artificial intelligence, robotization. All these technological innovations enable us to do things faster. We have fast information processing. Instead of sending post mail, we have internet and we have emails, and everything is, we have everything accessible to us. We have, we can send an email to millions of people with one click, fast transfer of people, goods. Everything is broader and faster than it used to be, thanks to the technological advancements. So this is how Rosa kind of summarizes this, is that we have this triple A approach to good life, meaning that we want the world and more of the world to be available, accessible, and attainable for us. But then, of course, this is one new twist that we got this year. So basically, a lot of these things might not have changed, but some of them have because of COVID-19. For example, traveling and collecting experiences and having the world accessible for us and attainable has been made a lot more difficult or even impossible at the time. So this is unfortunately not something that we were able to actually study in our project, because the data that we have been collecting were done a year ago. And some of the results that I'm going to show you today were done in Tampere University 2 years ago. But hopefully we can get some data, possibly next spring, that we could also have a bit of an understanding what this kind of worldwide pandemic changed the situation and had to do with it. But in a theoretical sense, you can probably relate to the fact that some way doing remote work and this kind of fast pace has not changed, but then some of the aspects, especially on the attainable and accessible world, has changed a bit. And I think this is also an interesting question. What will happen in the future, in the long term? What are the final or the kind of the big picture changes that the COVID pandemic has on these phenomena that I'm talking to you today? But for you to get a kind of more personal grasp or understanding of this phenomena of accelerating society and intensifying demands. So, of course, in your case, some of you might be working also during your studies, or you have been working before. Or then you can think about the way you do your studies and what you feel that your studies are. Like what kind of expectations you face. I want to look at the chat because I saw there's something. Oh, there's fluctuation. Oh dear. Okay. I know that my mic has not worked perfectly. So let me think about this for a while. I could try to just take it off and then hope that my dogs will not get the sighting of a squirrel in the window, so they won't bark a lot. So yes, let me try to take this. Can you hear me now? Yes, thank you. Okay, so let's do it this way then. Good that I stopped to watch the chat. I was wondering that there might be a more pressing issue. Okay. So hopefully you got at least something of my previous rambling, so you didn't miss all the kind of theoretical background. But yes, like I said, moving on to the kind of more practical terms, what this could mean in your life and in your daily life and work and studies. So when you look back the past 5 years, do you feel that you've been more busy? Like I said, that you have this kind of experience of being in a hurry all the time. Or have you felt that you have taken fewer breaks in your work or when you're studying? So it feels like you don't really have time to take a proper breaks, even though you know that it could be beneficial to you. Have you felt that you've been multitasking, doing a lot of things at the same time? Watching this kind of a lecture video and trying to read something maybe on the side and then look at the social media from your work, cell phone, etc. And have you felt that you increasingly need to kind of determine and decide and plan yourself how you do your studies or work? So this means that you really maybe have less support from others, or you feel that it's really up to you and you have to be a lot of independent and autonomous when you plan how you do your studies, for example. Have you felt that you have to put more effort when you're planning or building your career? So for example, when you think your life after you graduate and you're finished with your studies, do you feel that you have to think and put a lot of effort in, for example, what kind of job opportunities you might have or what kind of qualifications you might need? And also during your studies, you might feel that you have to already kind of look ahead. What kind of subjects do you want to study and take as minor, or what would be beneficial when you enter to the working life and to the job market? Well, this is something I think we all really do all the time, but these are also kind of important questions as they show us the kind of the intensification. So do you feel that you have updated or developed your knowledge about things? For example, how to do your studies? And did you have to learn how to use new systems or applications and software, etc.? So you can kind of reflect a bit. How do you feel? Maybe the questionnaire that we use in the study that has been developed to measure these demands, it asks to reflect the past 5 years. But of course, we could also, for example, in the pandemic situation, ask like, okay, what happened in the past 5 months or so? But the 5 year timeline is kind of, it was developed to kind of inherently tap on people's idea of change. So instead of asking, how are you doing now? What is happening right now? You kind of reflect on the past years and then what's kind of the changes and the trends that you have faced in your work in the past few years. And then here also a bit more kind of practical case example. This is just something I made up, but I also work as a goodie in our department. And I think this is something that we do see and hear from students. So maybe you can also relate. So a kind of a practical example of how these demands might show in your studies. So Rhys is a second year psychology student, and she contacted University Healthcare because she feels that she suffers from anxiety and emotional exhaustion and has sleeping problems. And she describes that the studies indeed have intensified during the last 2 years when she's been in the university. And she feels that the courses include a lot of new learning material, mostly in English, which also with new students, it can demand a lot to learn how to read in a not in your native language and all the scientific texts, etc. Courses have many different forms to complete them. So they can range from exams to essays, work group, to different interactive presentations or making lecture diaries. And in addition, with all these kind of demands, she has noticed that trying to keep up with and follow all the different corona instructions that change all the time take a lot of time and energy. And Rhys feels that she had to learn a lot of new skills. So she was able to use all the different applications and software that was demanded when the majority of teaching went online during this spring, like we can experience right now with this online lecture from my home. So Rhys thinks that the amount of new information and skills that she needs to acquire in order to be a successful student keep on increasing all the time. And it also feels difficult to ask any advice from teachers or other students, because they are all also very busy and all are facing the similar challenges. So you can feel like, okay, maybe I shouldn't bother my colleagues or other students, or I can't send an email to my teacher if I feel that I'm asking stupid questions because they are already really time burdened and busy. So she tries to manage alone. And again, all the corona restrictions and social distancing make it even harder to meet others and hard to get any support during these turbulent times that we are living. And if this isn't enough, Riis also worries about getting an internship place in the future. So in the psychology department, it can be a really demanding task because there's a lot of competition and it's hard to get a place to do your mandatory intern for several months as a psychology student. And she already feels anxious also about her future work career as well, how to find a job, how to build an interesting career. What does that mean even? How to keep her eligibility in the job market and also having this kind of broad aim of living a good life outside these job-related demands. So luckily, she decided to ask for help from the healthcare to find more resources, to find ways to cope with these many, many challenges that students are facing nowadays. So this is just a little practical example to maybe get a bit of a understanding of what this could mean in the student's life and context. But yes, the original model for intensified job demands, as I already shortly referred to, was developed in 2015. And it includes these four, or the last one can also be split into two, so in that case, five dimensions. And all the previous examples have kind of laid base for these definitions. So the first dimension is work intensification. So there's a bit of an overlap of the broader term, and then this is the first dimension, but what it means is that it actually taps on the hurry, mostly on the hurry side of things. So you might have fewer employees managing even a higher workload, and as I already said, the multitasking demands and feeling that you cannot even take time for breaks because you're so busy. And for example, you can believe that in healthcare at the moment, these kind of intensification challenges have definitely gotten higher because of the pandemic, because you have so many new tasks with all the testing and analyzing results, etc., beyond the regular work. And we can read from the newspapers weekly that the so-called normal patients with less pressing issues might feel that they have to wait a lot before they can get into treatment, for example. And this is one of actually the contexts that we are studying. So we have been collecting data from the central healthcare system here in Jyväskylä. Okay, and then the second dimension is job planning. So this means, like I had in the examples that I asked you to reflect on, is that you feel an increasing amount of expectations that you have to plan and structure your work day or your study day autonomously. So here is maybe the first time that we need to kind of discuss about the dual character of these demands. So of course, it's easy to understand that these are all not all kind of, negative demands and challenges that can be harmful for your well-being at work, because of course we do want and need some kind of independence and autonomy when we try to, for example, plan our workday. So one example would be that a lot of people actually felt that remote work has increased their well-being because they feel that they have the kind of autonomy to work from home and maybe, of course, depending on the job that they're doing, but they can have more autonomy than they had before, when you don't have to go to the office and have all the meetings, for example, scheduled there, but you can, yeah, probably you have more possibilities in at least in these kind of professional jobs, that you have more autonomy in your work than you had before. But then when it kind of goes to the negative, like if this is a spectrum, so then when you have too much of this autonomous demands that you have to face, and when you feel that you are alone and you cannot maybe get support even when you need it, so then it becomes more straining. A similar story with career planning demands. So when you feel that there's a need to secure and prove your value even as for your current employer, and at the same time increase your future employability. So this is, again, something that, of course, we enjoy, that we have possibilities that, okay, that's why we study, for example, that we have a better opportunities to choose from in the working life, and we have good qualifications for different jobs, etc. But then when you feel that this is kind of the ongoing uncertainty, for example, can I keep my current job, and am I doing enough, like it says here, to kind of prove your value for your employer? Or like in those examples that you kind of feel that it's straining when you need to plan your career ahead and worry about your kind of competitiveness in the job market. And then the final dimension, like I said, can be also split into two, but these have been found to have very high correlations. So they are kind of maybe a bit of two sides of one coin. So they are kind of represent the same phenomena. But the other one is knowledge-related learning demands, and the other is skill-related learning demands. So you face the pressure that you permanently need to refresh old information and acquire new work-related knowledge and skills. And this is also partly related to the technological advancements. So the sharing of knowledge is accelerated, and the kind of, like I said, about the short-lived trends in the society. So all this means that we are kind of, when we learn one way to do things, we are immediately facing the pressure to learn something new. And again, as students, I'm sure that you can maybe relate, for example, all the different systems that you have to enroll for your studies, or which is the platform where you return your schoolwork or study work. So all this kind of hassle that kind of keeps on increasing, and the pace is getting faster when old information and old systems are kind of changed with new ones all the time. Okay, so how does this actually look like in our working population? So here are a few examples of a variety of occupational groups that we have been studying. So here, like I said, that we focused on healthcare employees, which is the group number 9 here in our study in Jyväskylä University. But in Tampere, they did a really broad data collection. So it included, we often use this kind of trade union-based samples, which means that in Finland, we have a lot of employees who are already belong to a trade union, and we have good existing collaboration with these unions. So it's a good way to kind of target a broad sample of certain occupations. So here we had people who are working in the academia. So we had professors, group number 1. Then we had other academics, which would include me, for example. So different level researchers and university teachers. And then the biggest sample, sample 3, over 2,000 employees who were working as teachers. So mostly in outside the like lower education than university. And then we had economists, engineers, different professionals from representing industry and financial services. So this would be the kind of white collar professionals, if you use that kind of maybe old term. Then we had service sector employees, industrial employees, and these would be the blue collar, if you use those terms. And like I said, the last one was the healthcare employees that we studied here in Jyväskylä. So these are the mean ratings, so all the different dimensions for the increased job demands or intensified job demands. So they include the items that I showed you in the beginning of the examples, like, for example, do you feel that you have to plan your work more and more autonomously? And here we can see all the numbers in bold font are some numbers that the mean is over 3.5. So looking at the range from, yes, I feel not at all, these kind of intensified demands versus, yes, I feel that completely, these are the demands that have been increasing in the past 5 years. So all these bold fonts are kind of beyond the halfway point. So they are kind of, yes, they feel these intensified demands in their work. And we can look at some of the differences between these occupational groups. So work intensification of the hurry and the multitasking. So that was highest among professors, actually. I don't know, what do you feel about this? Is this a surprising result or not? So they actually felt even more than, let's say, healthcare employees. So they had higher ratings of this feeling that, yes, more and more you have to multitask, you don't have time to take breaks, etc. Whereas job planning, so the autonomous, independent thinking of how do I manage my workday and what do I do and in what order and how do I need to plan and execute these tasks that I've been given. So that was highest among economists. So maybe that's something that in their work has changed more than in others. So this kind of intensification is more present in that sector. Then we have career planning, and that was highest among academics. And again, at least I can relate to this result because of course, it's known that in academia that the university reforms and all that has led us to having so many employees who are like on a fixed contract. So you don't really know what you're going to do in a year or two or even months. You can have short job contracts and you're unsure about how you will kind of move on with your career in the future. And then we have the highest amount, which is overall also really high, over four in the whole mean of these dimensions. So among teachers, they had knowledge demands and skill demands that they reported that have really intensified in their work. And this is also something that maybe relates to the teachers' changing world of work that they have beyond their kind of core task of planning teaching. They have a lot of additional demands that they have to take care of students' well-being and interact with parents and all this kind of new technology that they have to use, Wilma and all these kind of systems that they have to keep on learning and update their knowledge and skills in these areas. And this is also interesting that if we would ask teachers now, how does the corona pandemic affect their experiences? So I would say that they probably would have even higher numbers of learning new skills, how to make remote teaching work, etc., and how to kind of balance. Maybe they would also have more work intensification because now they have to balance with students who are in school and then students who are in quarantine and then doing remote schooling from home. So I would guess that this is something that has really changed for a lot of teachers. I would be happy to hear if you have any relatives or friends who are working as teachers. So is this, as I suspect, that this is something that has changed a lot. Okay. And then this picture is in Finnish because I just took a capture of the already published study. So if you're a Finnish student and you're interested in this, you can find it online. I have also other references in the end, but this is just one example of a really recent publication where we looked at different leaders. And these also included university professors, but then we also had the economists and technical engineers, again, from different trade unions. So we had a group of leaders that we wanted to look at, like, are there individual differences? So, okay, the previous slide was the group mean. So, okay, teachers, on average, they have this kind of feelings of the intensified demands. But then we do a lot of these kind of, you could say, profiling studies where we look at latent subgroups among our whole bigger sample of employees or leaders in this case. So whether we can identify different subgroups who have among their subgroup, they have similar experiences, but then again, they differ from others. So this is kind of a way to get a more detailed picture of the phenomenon that we are looking for. So here you can see all the columns with four different colors. So the first one is the hurry dimension, the intensification of work in general. Then the second column is about the job planning demands, doing your work autonomously and even alone. The third one was the career planning demands. So when you feel that you have to prove your value to your employer and try to keep up with the job market to have a good career in the future. And the final one is the combined knowledge and skill related learning demands. So here we can see that the first one is the, they titled it the risk profile. And this is something that is also a bit alarming, that it actually half of the leaders, so 50% of the leaders were in this profile that was characterized by, these are standardized scores. So they had above average on each of the four dimensions. So they really felt that the job demands had intensified during the last 5 years in their career and work. So this was, yeah, kind of unfortunate, but also to be expected, because we know that leaders do face a lot of different demands from their employer and the kind of top leaders in the organization, and they also have to deal with different shareholders, for example, their followers, their employees, but also clients, etc. So leaders do can, it was kind of expected that they might have this kind of pronounced feeling of intensification in their work. Then we had the kind of favorable profile, which was positive, that it was almost 20%. So they had the lowest, or not the lowest, but they, compared to the other dimensions, they had below average feelings of work intensification, whereas they had average feelings of having these kind of, like I said, that they can also be positive demands. So you do enjoy that you can have some autonomy and planning your work, and then also the freedom to plan your career. And then the knowledge and learning demands were quite in the close to the mean. Then we had an interesting, also 20% of these leaders, they felt that they all, they at the same time, they felt this kind of time pressure and multitasking, high workload, low time to do it. So they had, that was quite high, or above average. And they also had this kind of learning demands that were above average. So this means that they had this kind of positive, challenging demands that they can learn new things and can learn new skills, whereas they had below average of career planning demands. So this was kind of a mixture of demands. Whereas the last two profiles are kind of just showing a different level. So here we have a low profile of 22% of the leaders having somewhat below average of each of these demands. And finally, this kind of unchallenging profile where 22% felt that they actually don't face any of these. They were really below, clearly below average. I will get back to these groups in a bit when we talk more about the well-being related to these job demands. Let's move on to the kind of next bit topic of this lecture, which was, okay, how about well-being? So how does this kind of intensified society and job demands associate with employees' well-being? And here I'm just going to kind of highlight three outcomes, especially two of them. One, I'm going to just give one result because we haven't really gotten any I will go through with these and you will see that there are kind of some of these were a bit unexpected. That, for example, the meaning of work, that we expected that would be stronger connections with these intensification demands, but we did not find as we expected. But just to go through, if you're not familiar with work and organizational psychology, so burnout, in a lot of studies and in our studies, we often use the two that have been mostly considered the main dimensions of burnout. So you have feelings of exhaustion. So you feel tired, you don't recover during weekends or vacations. You kind of feel that the job is so straining that you have this feeling of being exhausted. And this is kind of a prolonged reaction. So of course, most of us will have some days when we feel tired, more tired than usual. But then when this is kind of an ongoing kind of goes through your whole life, that you have this feeling that even during free time, you maybe do not have the energy to even do things that you enjoy. And then the other one is cynicism, which means that you kind of you lose the meaning of your work. You don't see any kind of positive impacts, and you kind of start feeling cynical towards co-workers or your clients or patients in a hospital, for example. And then the kind of positive dimension of well-being. So we maybe even too often focus on the negative and forget that it's also important to find ways and how to boost this kind of positive well-being. And work engagement is one of the kind of still of the one of the trend concepts that we are using a lot in research. So this means that you have these experiences of vigor, being energetic, having kind of this positive energy, vigor at your work, also being dedicated to your work and even absorbed by it. So this is something like, it's a positive feeling of being immersed in what you're doing at your job and feeling that, yes, I want to put time and effort and dedication to this. But instead of, for example, workaholism, it's not something that it's, workaholism is more of a kind of negatively experienced, like you have to, you must keep working for a few hours more to get everything done, and then you can have all this kind of negative well-being outcomes from that. But work engagement is more of this kind of thriving and positive feeling of feeling vigorous and dedicated in your work. And then, like I said, the meaning of work, I'm just gonna briefly introduce it here, but it's one of those kind of more modern outcomes of well-being, where we look at this kind of personal meaning. What do you feel that it's important in your work and feels that you can have, for example, positive influence on others and some kind of, more than just enjoying your work, but having this kind of meaningful experience. And what have been the most consistent findings? So as I said, that we've done a lot of sub-studies of these different occupational groups together, taking them apart, comparing them to each other, etc. And what seems to be the most consistent findings of all this, like I said, I have the references in the end, so if you want to go look in more detail, but what has been found also in beyond our study, so also in international research projects, it seems to be that when we look at burnout and also, or in more detail, exhaustion, we see that the work intensification seems to have almost all of the time, it has some kind of significant associations, and they are always negative, meaning that if you have high intensification, you have hurry, you have to multitask, you don't have time for breaks, so then you have more exhaustion. So this is a kind of negative outcome, but a positive relationship. So high means high. And the estimates of these associations have often been largest compared to these three other dimensions. Then we found that job planning has significantly smaller, but yet more often positive associations, meaning that when you have a lot of planning demands, you have to do your work autonomously, you also feel more exhausted. In a similar way, again, a bit more larger estimates we've found for career planning. So this means that it can actually be quite straining when you have these kind of ongoing demands to think about your future career and how you're going to manage in your current workplace and whether you're a good employee enough, etc. So it can also be a risk for having feelings of burnout and exhaustion. Whereas learning demands, they not always even have significant associations with burnout, which means that they are more of these kind of positive challenges. So they can be experienced as opportunities to learn new things and develop your knowledge and skills. But in some of our sub-studies, in some of our, for example, our study in the healthcare sector, it did have an association with burnout. So I think this shows that even though it's smaller, it still means that when you, like I said, that you have this consistent feeling of when you learn something, it's always replaced with a new system or a new application or something like that. So it kind of becomes straining at that point. So yes, this is something I already kind of talked about, but this is the kind of framework that we can use when we look at these intensified demands and well-being. So are there challenges or hindrances? So this challenge approach means that, like I said, that you can have this positive experience. Yes, it's good to have autonomy. It's good to have the opportunity to learn new things. It's good to have the possibility to plan your career, to have an impact on where you're going in your work life. And then the hindrance approach means that then they become this kind of negative stressors that actually have negative outcomes on your well-being. And for example, the study by Saya and our group showed that this is actually a kind of inverted U curve. So it means that when we look at these challenges and work engagement, which was the positive indicator of well-being, so especially job planning, so the autonomy in your work, and career planning, and these different learning demands, they can have positive associations with engagement, but they have to be kind of the moderate right amount. So like I said before, that if you feel that you don't have any autonomy, you don't have any learning demands, it kind of becomes an unchallenging job situation. So then you can have less feelings of engagement, which kind of makes sense that for us to feel that, yes, this I can dedicate myself and feel enthusiastic about my work. So then having this kind of good challenging demands enhances these kind of feelings. Whereas if you have too low of these positive challenges, or then when they go overboard, so then that kind of brings the association with engagement as a negative. So you have less engagement if you have too few or too much of these demands. And like I said, the one kind of significant finding that we found from our healthcare sector was that these knowledge and skill related learning demands were the only ones that had a positive relationship with this meaning of work. So this is also probably can be explained by the fact that, yes, you can feel your work as meaningful, especially when you have the opportunity to learn new things. And like I said, that I will go back with the subgroups a bit more. So here you can see the profiles that I presented previously. So we had the risk profile with the high ratings of all of the demands. Then we had the positive profile with low intensification, but otherwise the other demands were close to the mean. And then you had this kind of mixed profile that all had a combination of high intensification and high learning demands, but low career planning. And then we had the low profile with all kind of demands a bit under the average. And then finally, the kind of unchallenging profile. So when we look at the findings of how these leaders from these different profiles rated their own well-being at work, we find that surprisingly highest burnout ratings for cynicism and exhaustion were in the risk profile. So this is a really consistent finding, again, that when you have a lot of these demands at the same time, all in a high level, you also feel more burnout symptoms. Whereas in the favorable profile, you had the highest work engagement ratings among these leaders, and you had lowest burnout. And this is interesting, I think, that when you have the profile with the kind of conflicting demands, that you have both kind of the negative hindrance of having this high work pace and a lot of workload to do with little time. But then you also have these learning demands. So then you also feel, at the same time, you feel engaged and burned out. So it can be that this is kind of something that is committing you to your job and helping you to feel engaged when you have these learning demands, for example. But then when you feel that you have little time to do all your work, you also get exhausted and might burn out. And then these two groups, so the low profile also had low burnout, but it also had low engagement. And here is an interesting finding that the unchallenging profile actually had the lowest work engagement. So this is again in line with the idea of the kind of positive challenges demands. If you don't have any of these in your work, you also don't find a lot of feelings of being engaged in your work either. So you have to remember that this was a cross-sectional study, so we cannot say that, yes, having these intensifying demands leads to higher burnout, but this is something that we can say that at the same time these people are feeling, that these kind of different profiles of demands go hand in hand with different well-being evaluations that they gave on the same point of time. Then one finding related to a study that I've been doing among leaders as well. And here I studied leaders and then their followers. So we had a data set that we combined leaders and they kind of invited their direct reports, so their own followers, employees. So we sent them a link to the questionnaire and they forwarded to their followers. So here we find that when we look at the ratings given by the leaders themselves on these intensified demands, and then we combined it with the followers' ratings on how satisfied they were with their leader, we can actually find some interesting results that I would say that could be interpreted like demands push leaders to develop themselves. So the more the leaders themselves felt that they had these job planning demands, so that they do need to plan and execute their work autonomously, so then their followers actually gave more positive ratings on their leader member exchange relationship. So the kind of personal relationship that you have with your leader. So if it's based on trust and mutual collaboration, etc. So this kind of positive relationship between them. And they also, the followers gave better ratings on their leader's management skills. So for example, how the leader makes decisions and are they able to make firm decisions and being responsible, etc. And then those leaders who had themselves experienced that they have a lot of these learning demands. So then this associated with better follower ratings on their leadership skills. So leaders who had a lot of these learning demands in their job, so their followers were more satisfied with how they motivate them and give feedback, etc. So these kind of leadership behaviors that are more human related when the management skills are maybe more task related. So here we can see that this kind of positive challenge perspective can also be applied to the leader-follower relationship. And maybe, again, this was a cross-sectional study, so we cannot this is a hypothesis that it's actually this kind of developmental push that these demands give to the leaders. But it will be interesting to look at in the future. We have a possibility to collect more data, so then we could see whether it actually happens so that the leaders work demands, whether they affect their leadership behaviors over time, for example. Then an age-related finding. So I think this is also a bit interesting to look at, that we have different employees with a different age groups. So whether or not they have different experiences of these demands. So again, in Saya's study, they found that those who were in the, let's say, older employees, so they were aged from 55 to 64, so getting closer to retirement age already, so they actually reported more work intensification and more learning demands than the younger age groups. So possible explanations could be that, okay, when we get older, certain functions, like cognitive functions, can get a bit slower, or learning new information in a fast pace can feel more straining than when you're younger. So this would be one explanation. Or then you could also look at maybe there's a cohort effect, which means that this age group, when they were kind of starting their work life, they had a completely different environment and different society. Like I said, that this kind of intensification has, it has started already in the Industrial Revolution, but the kind of the pace keeps on accelerating faster and faster. So younger age groups starting their work life now may be more accustomed to the idea that, okay, I will not have a stable career, for example, that I will not be working with the same employer until I retire. Whereas these older employees have lived in that world, and they can therefore feel that this kind of intensification has happened even more. And this kind of learning new skills and updating information is something that they have to do even more. Whereas then we found that the younger employees, well, this is quite a big age group drawn together, but still aged from 18 to 44 years, they reported more demands for career planning and job planning than the older age groups. So again, maybe this is something that we can explain by looking at, like I said, that the younger employees are kind of accustomed to the fact that they do have unstable careers, and they maybe have to plan more and give more effort to even make a job career. If we are talking about, for example, a kind of you want to get promoted or move into more challenging tasks, so then you might have to do a lot of planning on how to get there, how to find new jobs and how to progress. And job planning demands, I think, could be explained by maybe they have less work experience. Of course, already if you're 44 years old, for example, you might have some, but still the feeling that you have to do your job autonomously and these demands keep increasing might relate to the fact that at least in the younger range of these age groups, so then you might feel that you are left alone because you might need more support when you're just starting your work career, but you are faced that you have to make your plans and how to execute your work really alone and independently. But again, this was the same big sample of employees that included a lot of different occupational groups. So we can kind of summarize that regardless of age, we still see that all of the different intensified demands associated with higher burnout. So this is something that is a risk regardless of which age group you're in. And then the end of this session and lecture, I would want to kind of talk a bit more about what might happen in the future and what is something that we can do, or can we do something to kind of prevent this acceleration of getting out of hand and having a majority of employees getting burnt out because of this kind of consistent growing pace and acceleration. And this is again something that we maybe have less scientific answers to yet, but I just wanted to kind of give some kind of food for thought. And you can also continue with these topics in your essays if you feel like it. So first, I think one big question is that we can call that we are in this kind of technological tsunami that we don't really know, like, where is it going and what are the effects over time? So for example, well, it's kind of related to the second point already. But when we have, we used to have different jobs, and then this kind of technological advancement changes the picture a lot. So we have less need for manual labor, for example. Whereas in the other opposite, you might need a lot of knowledge workers and professionals and experts. So what is the kind of, what happens? Do we speed up or slow down as a society? And also the kind of long-term effects of the COVID pandemic. So like I said in the beginning, that we have certain effects that we see already, that we are kind of the opportunities to collect all these different experiences and et cetera. So that has changed enormously in a short amount of time. So what would be the kind of reaction that we have? For example, if we get the vaccine and then the situation changes and, for example, traveling is allowed again in a broader sense. So do we kind of keep the way that this kind of slowing down that people have found that, yes, I have to stay at home. So then maybe I find more time with family and I enjoy making my own bread. And this kind of slowing down phenomena that we can hear from people and then read from the papers and then et cetera, that is this something that we then want to hold on to, even though we have, again, the world might be open for us in the future, but is this like a value decision that, okay, now that we had this kind of really exceptional time in our lives, did it teach us anything? And yes, like I already kind of said related to this, that what are the challenges that might lie ahead for the people who are doing more physical and manual labor? Because when technology advances, it might take over some jobs that previously were like human-made. And what does happen then? Do these people, do they have to find education for different types of tasks in the same organization, or what kind of work demands they are facing? And then on the other opposite is the cognitive demands that I think will kind of represent even a larger risk for people who are doing professional work. So this kind of like we saw in the different occupational groups, the professors were actually the ones who said that the work intensification has increased more than the other groups. So this is something that, yeah, what happens in the future? And then the third point I would like to make in this kind of, when we are trying to imagine the future that lies ahead. So what I would like to kind of emphasize is that we also need changes that are done by the leaders of the organization, because they have the kind of responsibility and power and possibilities to make these changes to the whole workplace and organization, at the organizational level and at the societal level. Because when we are talking about well-being at work, and like you can see from my slides as well, that I often talk about individual burnout and individual engagement, and then we often start to talk about, okay, what can you do and what should you do as an individual person? So, okay, your job has all these demands and you just have to find ways to cope with them. But I think that's not the whole picture, because if we feel that, or we see that, for example, exhaustion and burnout is being caused by bad leadership, unfunctioning systems in the organization, the division of work is not done equally among employees, or employees' personal lives and different situations are not taken into account, and there's not enough, let's say, flexibility or autonomy to the workers, etc. So then, of course, the solution or the intervention should take place in the organization and where the kind of problems are kind of where do the problems start from, and not to look at, for example, learning skills to like mindfulness or something like that for the individual to kind of just breathe deeply to kind of cope with your crazy workload and time pressure in your work. So then you have to take into account the both sides, of course, but then also remember that there's a responsibility with the leaders and with the organizations and as a whole society and what kind of values and decisions we make and as a collective. And I think one question is that in the future, how can we increase and support feelings of agency? So you're a player in your own life and in your own work life, you have ability to make decisions and an effect on things, capability and belonging. And this is something I think nowadays a lot of us are struggling with. That we are all in our own homes, doing our studies, doing our work remote from others and then social distancing. But also after the pandemic, hopefully, is over and we can return to our university classes and our offices. We still need ways to kind of support this belonging than just being alone in the kind of in the eye of the technological tsunami and the acceleration society. Kind of a counterforce to all that. And this is just one kind of illustration of the history of work that I think really kind of relates both to the increasing job demands and the intensification, and also to the ways of kind of fighting back and what can we do and what is the way to secure our well-being. So here we can see that in an agrarian society, the employee value were mostly related on surviving. So then it was important to have a desired employee who was strong to do all the manual labor and et cetera that was needed at that time. And then the development focus of employees would be to increase their stamina. Whereas in industrial times, you would more and more start to focus on, okay, how satisfied are the individual employees? Do they feel that their work and life is satisfying? And then the kind of desired characteristic was efficiency. So then we had all these kind of different ways to, yeah, this was kind of the start of the acceleration society, that we want to have efficient employees and processes and everything that is done faster with more results. And then the development focus would be on craft mastery. Then we will move on to the information society. So then, like I said, that we've studied a lot of work engagement. So then this would be the kind of positive focus, that you're an engaged worker beyond being satisfied, but you can feel engaged. And then a desired characteristic would be knowledge and curiosity. So you would be able and interested in being a part of the information society and developing these characteristics in your work. And then we also started to see this kind of focus on increasing creativity and innovation. But this is something that I think it's kind of ongoing and maybe not even reached its full potential yet. And I actually had a webinar where I was talking with people who represented maybe more of them private sector organizations, and there were a few participants from Helsinki area, and I think they said that from their perspective this has already happened, that people are, they want to find work that it's personally meaningful and brings some kind of fulfillment to them, so that it's not about making money or getting the salary or even getting engaged in your work, but you, like I said, the meaningful work that you want to have this kind of personal understanding of what is the kind of value of my work and what am I doing and how does it benefit me or others or the society, and what is the meaning that I'm looking for in my job. And here the focus kind of moves on to self-awareness. So then you need to be aware of your personal values and goals in life and work. And then the developmental focus becomes purpose. So then you kind of strive towards having this larger meaningful, purposeful life and work, which is part of the whole. So related to this kind of shift of what we value in work and what comes in the future that we don't know yet. So related to that, we can look at different aspects of, okay, so then if we do look at the ways to buffer and protect people from these negative hindrance demands. And now I'm again going back to the individual, which I already said that it's not the only way that we should be looking at. But it's one. So I'm just want to highlight a few potential ways that could act as buffers, protective factors in our work life. And these are actually something that we've studied in our in Tampere and in Jyväskylä. And the thing is that when I showed you the slide, that the consistent findings were highly related on burnout and this kind of negative outcome of these demands. But then it's been really hard to find these buffering effects. Of course, it always has to do with the fact that what kind of samples do you have, and interaction effects can be more difficult to detect. But it's still been quite, I don't know, even disappointing that all the kind of theoretical hypothesis that we've been making and all these measurements that have been included to our studies, it's really not that straightforward of finding any buffering effects. And that was kind of the whole main, one of the main goals of the whole consortium project that we have, is to kind of learn more about what could help us if our society around us is accelerating all the time. So what can we do? And then the answer is that really it's kind of, it's not that strong of these protective effects that we actually find. And they can really be more specific related to your own work or your age group, etc. So we cannot find this kind of consistent findings that we find for burnout, for example, that was kind of overarching all occupational groups, etc. But what we tried to study and look at, well, one important aspect is how to get detached from your work. So we know that it's important for your well-being to get some kind of physical distance and mental detachment from these work-related actions and thoughts during off-job time, so when you're at home. So then mind switches off from the work mode and you can find kind of recovery experiences which give back your energy, and your mental energy kind of replenishes, and then you feel that you have energy left for the following day to come. But then again, the coronavirus really spiced things up. So then it's really hard to get this physical distance because you are working mostly from home in a lot of jobs nowadays. So then trying to find ways to get the mental detachment happening becomes even more important. So that's one dimension that you could focus on, finding ways to build some kind of boundaries for your work and studies as well, and to get different routines and things in your everyday life to help you to get this mental detachment, which again is also kind of challenged by this technological advancement. So all people, I would say, so many people have their cell phones with their emails and push notifications. Some compared to previous times when you would shut the office door and go home and you wouldn't even have the possibility to see your work emails, and your clients or your boss would never think about phoning to your home phone. But nowadays, these kind of technological advancements have also blurred the lines. So then it can become more and more the responsibility of the individual employee to build these boundaries. Then we can look at job crafting. So this is one way that we can make changes in our work, for example, to find it more meaningful. So this means that you have the kind of leverage to, for example, talk with your leader or a supervisor that okay, I would like to have more of these types of tasks in my job, and I feel these are my strengths, and I would like to have more use for them. And could we maybe, you know, agree that I will have more autonomy in planning my, let's say, the how I do the tasks during the workday? These kind of personal adjustments that you can feel that your work becomes more meaningful and more kind of fitting with your style of working and your personality, etc. But for example, in our studies, we did not find this to be a buffering mechanism. So this one reason that could explain it is that it's actually just another demand that you have to fulfill in your work as an employee. So even though it can have positive effects in some points, but then when you look at it in at the same time with all these other intensifying demands, so then it could be that it's really not, it's just another stressor rather than something that protects you and makes you feel, let's say, more engaged or finding more meaning in your work. And then finally, one kind of new aspect that we wanted to have in this research project was to look outside the kind of Western traditional understanding of what is well-being, which is often focusing on these high positive energy states. Like I said, for example, that work engagement is characterized by vigor and energized feeling of doing your work. Whereas more kind of in the Eastern tradition comes this kind of quite new scientific concept of peace of mind, which means that we can have a positive mental state, which is characterized by low arousal. So then you can have these feelings of inner calm and harmony. And this is something that we wanted to test, whether it could actually buffer. So when the society and work life is accelerating around you, so then you can find this kind of personal place of inner calmness and help to kind of buffer from the negative effects. But at least in our healthcare organization that we studied, we did not find any buffering effects. And again, this could be related to the fact that in healthcare, you're already facing so many intensification demands and the work days are hectic. For example, if you're working as a nurse or a doctor, so it could be that it really doesn't make a difference if you try to just find your inner harmony, or it's not even possible in that kind of working environment. But this is something that I think it's useful to run another study or use other types of working groups to get more evidence of whether if in some contexts it could actually act as a buffer. And then last for the future and how to kind of tackle these intensifying demands that the world is posing us. So the first is related to my previous studies that I've been doing more related to your personal moral self and moral identity and realizing and reflecting on your values. And this also relates to the slides where I told you that this is something that when we're trying to kind of find a new purpose and meaningful work, it has to include reflecting on what is important to you. So in order to find a job where you feel purposeful and meaningful, it's easier if you have an understanding what is important to you. So this would be one place where you could start. So kind of tackling the intensified job by first figuring out your own values. For example, if you feel that you want to value family life, not only strive for progression at your work career, and you want to stay healthy and you want to take care of having ways and time to recover from work, for example. So if these are important values to you, you might want to spend a bit more time figuring out how you make this possible. So for example, when you're remotely working, what kind of routines can you adjust to your new way of working so that you can actually not feel that you have your work mind on all the time, but you also get to detach and switch off from this work mode? And what would be the best way for you to do that? And then one example is finding some kind of anchors in your work or studying life. So as I started this lecture with my poor mic, talking about how Rosa has theorized this accelerating society. So I was actually listening to his keynote a few years back in a conference when we still had conferences, not online. So he talked about these even so small things like making your work computer your personal, like having your personalized background image or having some kind of posters or pictures of your family at your office desk or whatever you can find that kind of help to attach to this time and place when everything else is kind of shifting all the time. And this relates to the last point, which is resonance. And this is more now, again, from the societal perspective. Well, also includes the individual, like what can you do? But then like something that we could strive towards in a more broad sense than just as an individual person. So this is Rosa's quote. So he says that resonance, it means something, the discovery of something that speaks to you and touches you, to which you can reach out and respond. And these experiences can be found in all aspects of our life where we find and interact with something other than us. So he talks about resonance, and it's often recognized by some kind of emotion that is evoked in you. And in one, actually the TEDx talk that I had the link in the first slide, if you want to hear Rosa himself talk about this phenomena. So he talks about crying, for example, that this is something that we all can relate to, and we know that when we are crying, something has touched us and something has moved us. Of course, resonance doesn't mean that it's only something that you have to cry about, but it kind of helps you to kind of maybe grasp that it's something. If you ask people that what has been, for example, a meaningful moment in their life or in their work, so then it's quite universal that people do talk about something that has this kind of emotional response, and they felt something and they felt moved by something. So this is what Rosa suggests, that we could try to pay more attention to these moments, and also this, they have something to do with interaction with others, so it's more than just us. And then from the societal perspective, he says that we need a society that grows when appropriate and innovates when necessary, but not one that must accelerate simply in order to survive. So the triple A in the first slide should be replaced with resonance. So by this, he means that he doesn't say that we need to kind of, like I said, slow down as a society or go back to something that was previous in previous history, that, okay, let's not do digital, let's not use any of us our technological innovations anymore, or let's try to just slow everything down. But rather that, yes, we do need to grow when it's appropriate and make innovations where we need them, for example, the vaccine for COVID, but then not kind of accepting that our society is something that just in order to survive, we need to keep on accelerating all the time. And here one key difference, what Rosa says, is also in how we kind of approach life and how we approach these goals. So if we just think about survival and trying to keep up and doing more and more, like I said in the first slide. So this is kind of driven by fear, that we fear that we are missing out, we are not good enough, we are not succeeding in our lives or in our careers. So this should be replaced with the idea of finding this kind of shifting the perspective out of fear and then moving towards something that speaks to you and is important to you and is valuable. And this I think it could sound maybe idealistic, but I think it's a good point to consider. Okay, so I have spent almost my time, but I wanted to, well, this is for the essay topic. So these are just some ideas that I wrote down. If you want to focus on this topic, but you feel like, okay, where could I start? So I have given these two articles to Jarmo, so you should have access to them, and you can use them as references. And here are just a few suggestions on what you could write about if you feel interested. And then just if you want to read more about Rosa's ideas or then our studies that have been, some of them have already been published. And here are also some international references on how this kind of work intensification is actually more than just ordinary job demands. So that this kind of feeling of intensification over time is something that differs from other types of work demands. And then, of course, the challenge and hindrance approach, if you want to read more of that. But then I think I will maybe leave it here. And then I would love to hear your comments or questions. So if you feel like writing in the chat or even asking for you can also speak if you feel like it. So I would like to hear your thoughts or questions. But if not, I'm also happy to stop here and give you time to think through all this that I presented, and hopefully you find some points of resonance with what I went through. And yeah, I wish you a good end for this course and good luck with your essays. And if you find any questions after this, you can also contact me by email. You can find it from the university staff list. I don't think I added to the slides. Okay, thanks for the comments. The articles and lecture provide new perspective. That's nice to hear. And nice to hear that you're still there. It's really weird talking alone at home and then not really getting a response or any idea whether you're asleep or or still with me. Okay, but I think we can end here, and thank you for participating.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
Bye.